Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
And a very good evening to you. Monday, August the 15th, you are listening to Manx Radio, and time to continue our election coverage now. This evening, we speak to a sitting member, a member of the House of Keys from 2006 to 2011, and a member again since May last year in a constituency which is to retain its name despite proposals otherwise, seeking re-election for a further five-year term. Douglas South MHK, Bill Mullarkey, good evening to you.
Good evening, James. Good evening, listeners.
Well, you said last year, May last year, if successful, you'd hit the ground running. In what ways have you, do you believe?
I believe, James, I have hit the ground running. I've kept just about all the promises I made in my manifesto. I've worked extremely hard. I've already only had a 12-month period to make a change and a difference, and I believe I have done that.
And in what ways would you say that? Locally or nationally or a bit of both?
On all levels, to be honest. I don't like to think of myself just as a local or community politician. I also have a lot of now national experience, and that's exactly what we need at the moment moving forward.
In terms of the role isn't just national politics, though. As you say, it's about people, it's about constituents who have placed their trust in you. What constituency issues have you got on the go? I know Pinewood is something you're working on, the bid to ensure that pub is saved and put to good use. That's just one of them.
Well, the first thing I'll say is, yes, get away from the word pub, because it's never going to be a pub again. Social club, yes, and that's what I'm working on with the residents. We have a committee. I really can't tell you too much, James, but you'll be getting a press
release.
A press release in the next 24 hours will be coming out. But things are looking extremely good. But it's not as a pub. It'll never be a pub again. This, I want to be a social club for the community, for all ages. I want this to work as a community-based social club.
So potentially, could this double up as the Youth and Community Centre you've been pushing for in Anarcha, potentially?
Yes, we've already had, I think, 65 members already joined at this stage in anticipation. Obviously, if it doesn't work, they'd get the money back. And quite a few of those applying do actually come from Anarcha and surrounding areas. So I'm quite excited that this is a go. And as I said, watch this space.
Watch this space. I mentioned at the top of the programme that you're in Douglas South, and it's going to stay Douglas South. That was under threat for a little while, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't under threat. It was actually called Douglas West. That's annoyed me since the day that it went through as Douglas West. And also an awful lot of people who I went knocking on doors during April and May last year going, why are we suddenly changing? Now, I know it's a very incidental thing and it's certainly not of any national interest, but for the people of South Douglas, it was important to them. So it was my job to try and put that right. You wouldn't believe that I had to go through full legislation all the way through Keys and Legislative Council to achieve it. It was literally a one-word change. But it went through and it got royal assent, and now Douglas South is firmly in the books as Douglas South, and that's the way it's staying. And that's the way it's staying, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me talk Douglas South preschool facilities, because I know you worked a few years back during your first term in office to help start preschool. I think it was at Anarcha and School Valley Shield. Both facilities were lost eventually when this preschool voucher system came in. Have children in the area been affected, or do you think it's levelled itself out?
I think very much so. You know, I'm in the Department of Education. I've made it extremely...
Been affected?
I think they've been affected, and I think now the department's also realised that when we've been visiting all the primary schools around the island, all the head teachers have made it quite clear to the minister and the chief executive, because I've kept prompting them and asking them the questions in front of them, do they see a change and a difference? Can I explain that the basic difference between the voucher system and the private nurseries, the head teachers and the teachers don't get to meet the pupils prior to them going to school. Now, I don't want to sort of go into a class situation when I say working class situation. In areas of social housing, we have schools in Anarcha and Williston, in Ballasalla. These schools used to have a preschool themselves within the school. By the time the children actually started school at the correct age of five, the teachers, the head, everybody knew what their prospects were, what their demands were. It was easier. The pupils knew all the other classmates in that school because they would normally be staying.
So they were integrated more.
Totally integrated. And the schools...
You don't believe that's happening now?
Well, it's not, because even where in the areas where preschool is in schools, it's separate from. I'll give you an example of the cloth workers in Peel. Now, that there is a preschool in there, but there's absolutely no connection between the head and the teachers and the preschool. So when they're getting their pupils in at the beginning of September, the new intake, they might not all be going to that school for a start. The teachers have no idea what their abilities are. So I believe they've lost out, and so do the head teachers.
Well, a couple of education ministers have been told this. Chief executives, senior advisors, etc. have been told this. It's not going to change in a hurry. They made that clear a few months ago. How can you try and get one or both of these facilities reinstated? Or is that gone now?
I think I've managed to do enough in the last 12 months of being in the department to make them realise that this is going to have to change in the future if we want our very young children to progress quicker. Because there's costs, there's savings to be made if teachers and heads know before the children come in what the demands are, whether there's going to be special needs, all sorts of things like that. And that can only be done if the preschool is actually in the school. Now, we understand the voucher system did help round the island for private different nurseries and more people to go. But I still believe it could be cheaper run, or we have to get a balance between some preschool, especially in the areas of social housing. I don't want to keep emphasising this, but these are the areas that the headmasters or the headmistresses of these schools are noticing more and more. They're not getting the information before the children come to school.
When state-run preschools were transferred into private ownership, of course, if you were to change that back, or even in some areas, presumably that's going to be more difficult than said, because they're leasing the buildings, if you like. They're running them in place now.
But they are leasing the buildings, but there's no connection, because they're privately run, there's no connection between the building.
No long-term contracts?
Well, I'm not sure what the contract is. The point is there's an isolation between the preschool and the school. Now, for instance, School Valley Shield and Annika School, who both had preschool pre this voucher system coming in, cannot have preschool in there in any form, because there's no way of segregating the preschool away from the school, because one's run as a private enterprise, one's run as Department of Education. So that lack of being able to separate the place means that there will never be preschool in them schools. And there's many, many other schools around the island in exactly the same situation.
Tell me, you're now a member of the Department of Education and Children, of course. Has government restructuring, reorganisation worked, do you think?
I certainly, within the Department of Education and Children, could say yes, it has. Absolutely wonderful team I've been working with for the last 12 months. There's some exciting times on the horizon as far as I'm concerned, because we're really now looking to the future and the needs of the Isle of Man for the future within the department. The great news, and it was great working with the team on the opening of University College Isle of Man. Now, that's a major step forward for the island. My dream and the department's dream in the future and the chief executive's dream is that this can be a standalone university going forward in the future, within 5 years. This is possible.
Well, you obviously support the new nunnery ICT project. Describing it, I know you've described it in the past as a sort of IT centre of excellence. It's taking, I appreciate some of this was before your time as well, it's taking far too long, this, isn't it, to get off the ground. And in some cases, isn't it duplicating what's already happening at, well, University College Isle of Man, as is known now?
No, because the University College Isle of Man students will actually be learning down at the nunnery. So that section is freeing up areas of University College at the nunnery. It will work extremely well side by side with University College, and it will hopefully, moving forward, we'll have the right type of people coming through there that's needed for the industry in the Isle of Man.
Tell me, can you achieve much without being part of government, or do you think you have to be within to make things, really make things happen?
You must be in if you want to make a change. You cannot. I learned this, you know, going back in 2006. From the outside, you cannot make a change. You can stand up and shout all you like in Tynwald, but if you want to make a real difference, you've got to be in a department. You've got to be having your voice heard.
I know the slogan the first time you stood was something along the lines of "Time for Change." Has that happened?
Well, obviously, there's been a lot of changes, and I've seen a lot of changes between not getting elected in 2011 and then coming back in. I had almost a 4-year gap. And I did see major changes within areas, some better than others, should I say. But certainly within the Department of Education, I've seen some great changes for the better. And moving forward, as I said, it's exciting times. We have to The big argument at the moment is the amount of students that we're losing going off island to universities and not coming back. A bit of a brain drain for the Isle of Man. And we've got to stop that. So the more courses that we can supply on the island, the more students we can keep on the island, the better it is going to be for the island. And also for the student, because not all students want to go away to university and end up with a massive debt at the end of the day to start their working careers with. So the more courses that we can put on the college, even if we can keep them here for the first two years or 3 years of that course, or even 1 year before they have to go away, that can only be better for the student. It can be better for the island and for the economy, because they're spending that money that they would have been spending away on the island.
I know education is something you've been very spoken about and passionate about. Another subject close to your heart, the bid to stop some serious drug and alcohol problems with young people in particular. Is anyone getting on top of that?
I can honestly say I haven't seen anything great being put in front of me in the last 12 months. I think I said I would hit the ground running within 4 minutes of the first question in Keys on the first day. I was on my feet asking questions about the drug and alcohol strategy to, at that stage, it was the health minister, because the strategy had been moved from the Department of Home Affairs over to health. Now it's gone over to public health. So being fair on them, there's been quite a transition going on in the last 12 months. What I will say, I am delighted with the blanket ban on illegal hires. This is something I've been calling for a long time. I was watching what Theresa May was doing when she was trying to drive this forward. I think it's the right step. You blanket ban everything, and then you have to register what you're selling. It makes legislation much easier and prosecution much easier. These are things we really have to worry about going forward.
If you are successful on September the 22nd, do you need to be a minister now? Because obviously you'll be one of the more experienced potentially in there. Or would you content to be a backbencher? Would you take any role offered to you?
I would serve where I think I'm fitted in any role. All I'll say is I believe I have the experience. I have a proven track record. If I was called upon to be a minister, yes, it would. Honestly, depending on where I can work with who that chief minister is, and then of course that's a big question mark at the moment. So there's a lots of ifs, ands, and buts there, James. I mean, if you're trying to pump out of me who the next chief minister is going to be, I really couldn't. I couldn't begin to guess. I have a few ideas who would like to be, but I think that's up to the public to see who they back the most at the polls.
I think there's a few who'd like to be, but it's whether they have the support of their colleagues, of course, if elected.
Absolutely correct. You know, there's a few that would like to be that I would never contemplate. So
voting for. Tell me, I mean, there's lots of criticism of supposed government mismanagement here, but we obviously have nowhere near the scale of debt that other countries have on relative terms. Tell voters listening, is the picture as bleak as it's painted by some?
No, not at all. I feel sorry for a lot in our society who have suffered over the last few years because of the cutbacks and the extra taxes. I mean, one promise I make going forward is, you know, we've got to stop hitting the poor man on the street and the vulnerable with regard to taxes and increases. And,
snip here, snip there.
Yes, I think they've had enough of it. We've got to go out and grow the economy. Stop hitting those on the island and go out and find new business. That's when I don't think the government's been successful.
But where do we find new revenue without a snip here and a snip there?
We don't sell this island well enough. I mean, I was at a CPA conference in May, and I was speaking to representatives from Jersey and Guernsey. They are so jealous of the Isle of Man. They're jealous of our international standing, of our reserves, of the whole infrastructure of the island. And moving forward for them, they are trying to mirror themselves on us. We should be out there selling all that infrastructure, all that wonderful stuff that we do in the Isle of Man, and I don't think we do it well enough. People talk about, well, Brexit this year and what's going to happen. I see this as an advantage, not a disadvantage, with Brexit. The Isle of Man has never been in the EU. We've never contributed any money to the EU, so we're not going to be losing any money from the EU. The only thing we get out of the EU is Protocol 3, the freedom of trade and the freedom of travel.
Are you pushing for independence here?
Not at all. What I'm saying is UK is not going to walk away with this. We're not having some freedom of travel and some type of freedom of trade. Neither is Europe going to want to do that with the United Kingdom, because there's too much money to be lost if they start imposing too many restrictions. We should be telling ourselves as an island, look, you're worried about Brexit. We've been the Brexit of the past anyway. You know, we've never been a part of Europe. Come and see how you survive without being a part of Europe. Why aren't we attracting these UK worrying countries to companies to come to the Isle of Man?
Maybe one issue is the pensions. I mean, how can you help ensure that we manage the island's pension legacy debt?
The legacy debt can only be dealt with through growth, not by taxing everybody on the Isle of Man, by growth. If we cannot grow our economy, then we are sunk. I quite believe that. But we've had continuous growth, I think, for 30 years. And if it hadn't been for that, we really would be in trouble. But now is the time to even increase that. I believe there's big opportunities out there for us to go and grasp, because there's a lot of confusion going on with the Brexit and everything else running around. We can go much further afield. We're starting to get good ties in with China. We've got deals going on between China, Liverpool and the Isle of Man, which will help to grow in certain areas. There's a lot more. Basically, we need somebody to do PR for us.
You're at last half full, man.
Absolutely, it's half full. I think it's more than half full, James. But we just don't go out there and grab the opportunities that we could.
The government pays an agency in London a significant sum a year to do its PR.
Well, they do some PR. We spend more money in Europe trying to do, in Brussels, doing PR and finding out what's going on. You know, you have to invest to get any return. And, you know, I know people say, oh, there's ministers off doing free trips here and free trips there. These ministers are selling the Isle of Man. That's really important. How many times do you meet people who know absolutely little about the island? So very little about the island. And you think, well, you know, what a great place it is. Low tax, 0-10, no death duties, lowest crime rate in, you know, in Europe. Fantastic scenery, wonderful heritage. You know, these are all things, quality of life. We're not selling that. I know that there's people saying, oh, we can't grow the population by another 10, 15 or 20,000. We need a lot more of the right type of people coming to the island, getting paid the right type of money to help our economy drive forward. These people will be high earners. They will be paying high national insurance. They'll be paying high income tax. And they'll be putting stuff back into the economy that we desperately need.
There has been a bid to attract high net worth individuals, of course, over a long period. Just let's look further down from where we're sat now, because Douglas Promenade, and I know last year in the by-election you said we mustn't experience further delays in the refurbishment of the promenade. Let's get on with the job, address the issues that affect us all. No more money wasted on consultations. And ironically, your horse-drawn motion last month has sort of further delayed the proposals.
It has, but at least there's a decision being made by everybody. Hallelujah. I mean, now we know exactly what we want and how we want to move forward. It's unbelievable what's happened in the last 12 months since I was elected. I mean, we had a plan ready to move forward, and then there was objections put in, then there was delays, then the council pulled out of it, then it was put over to DOI. It's just been a saga. A running saga. Finally, Timmelt has said, yes, we want to support the horse trams. Yes, we want them to run after my amendment, not just to the Villa Marina, but all the way to the sea terminal. We have a clear plan going forward for
this
future.
This should be the end of it now.
Hopefully, get the plans in. Let's get on with it. And, you know, there's a possibility somewhere will object to something going down the line and try and hold things up again. I say to them, please don't. Let's get the promenade sorted out once and for all. Let's keep the horse trams. They're very important to us. Tourism is going to be a very important part of our future.
Well, because of your motion, the horse trams are going to go the full length of the promenade, which takes us to the sea terminal end, and it takes us to the user agreement, if you like. It's been widely documented you're opposed to the renewal of that in its current form. Where do you stand on the latest development? Because obviously we've had these new steam packet proposals that went before Timwald as well.
Yes, the first thing I said when I got in and I had a meeting with the Chief Minister, I said, look, I'm going for a select committee to look into the whole seaports and future of the sea services in the Isle of Man. He asked me to talk to Mr. Gorn. We spoke, and it was agreed between Mr. Gorn and myself that we'd move forward with a working group looking onto the sea services. Now, it went on for about 9 months, and I sat on there with several other MHKs, some experienced ones with regard to the steam packet, some not so experienced. At the end of the day, I wasn't happy with what came forward, the proposals from the steam packet. I don't think this is the time to be renewing the user agreement. I think we need to take control. I've said this all the way down the line, and I think it can be done. I honestly do. And that's what came out of the working group, because we had, you know, Chief Exec from Treasury saying, well, yes, it is possible. For us to start renewing it now, I think we'd be absolutely suicidal for the future of our island.
There's plenty of time. We're coming to fairly towards the end of the programme. We could talk about Harcroft Meadows and that select committee. The parliamentary reform, the Lord Lisavain inquiry, we know the findings now and those recommendations will be looked at by the new House. But you actually carried out a public poll on this and brought some of the comments to Tynwald. Was there a consistency in what you heard from punters?
Yes, there was. I mean, the poll, I thought, was extremely useful, and so did Lord Lisavain. I mean, he thanked me for bringing that forward. At least the views of the public, there was well over 300 people did the poll. Some of the answers you could have guessed anyway, but, you know, we want Legislative Council voted in by the public. Some stuff that Lord Lisavain took on board. That's going to be a very interesting debate moving forward, and it's something that, for the future, but let's not get mixed up and too worried about the reform when we've got really big matters to deal with. You know, the economy of this island has to be the new parliament's number one priority. I used a saying on another radio station when I did an interview a couple of weeks ago about pothole politics, and I believe the Chief Minister also used that last week. I must have a word with him and say,
Where's your copyright
on that one?
Potholes, Peel Road, makes me think of flooding.
Yes. Flooding and the NSC and the millions of pounds worth of damage done. I've been heavily campaigning on that one to get the flooding sorted out so that we don't have the same thing all over again. I'm glad that now coming through, it's now the number one priority. I was delighted after a lot of arguing within Tynwald and within Keys to see the diggers at least down at the River Doon, the River Glass, taking out all sorts of things like bicycles and all sorts of rubbish that the rivers have built up over the years.
You mentioned there about the snip and the cuts here, a bit there. One issue at the moment is television licences. Should pensioners over 75 have to pay?
You know, that's a very sad issue. And this was something that was put into the budget, not this year. It was actually 2015, just pre-me going back into Tynwald. I hate having to see the pensioners paying that money over 75, but at the same time you also have to look at what it costs the taxpayers of the Isle of Man. When you step back, and I think the price, I think, was costing about, it was about £700,000 to pay for the TV licenses. A lot of those people, James, could actually afford to pay for a television license. I quite believe that there are those that genuinely should have their television licenses paid for. But when you're using,
but not all.
When you're using the excuse because grandma's still living with you and she's 75, and everybody else in the house is like in their 40s and 50s and all out at work, do you think the taxpayers should be paying for the TV license in that household? Personally, I think not. We have to be obviously very keen with our money these days because we haven't got, you know, an awful lot to waste. But we have to make sure it goes to the right people. And I really strongly believe that, you know, the review on who gets it needs to be looked at more carefully.
Well, you're hoping that on September the 22nd, enough of the right people vote for you. Just finally, Mr. Malarkey, if you're re-elected, what would your priorities for the next 5 years be?
Building the economy, selling the island. I can't emphasise enough on that. Tourism, again, it's going to be a big part of our growth for the future. You know, tourism has grown by about 1% or 2% per year at the moment. We have to drive that forward even more. Every penny we can get onto the island will help us not have to tax people moving forward.
Douglas South candidate Bill Malarkey, I don't know where the 25 minutes has gone.
I've got no idea.
Thank you for your time this evening.
Right. Thank you, James.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.